This is a Triple J podcast.
Prescription pills, it was alcohol, it was ice, it was G.
That may be the view of young people, it's not the view of our government.
If I don't meet a girl, it's pretty hard to tell her that I'm uncontactable.
To connect, to have a good time, to dance it off like nobody's watching.
This is going to have an effect for generations to come.
It's been called one of the most unprecedented environmental disasters. An underwater bushfire and one of the worst in the world. I'm talking about the record level of toxic algae bloom spreading throughout the coastline of South Australia. And it's got people panicked about summer. Hey, it's Dee Salmon filling in for Dave Marchese. And coming up on Hack, we'll find out what the plan is to stop the thousands of sea creatures being killed and locals getting sick. And if you live in South Australia and this is something you're worried about for the summer, I'd love to hear from you on 0439 757 555. You can send me a text. A bit later, though, we'll also be chatting about ghosting.
I don't ghost. I will just be like, lovely to get to know you, but I'm just not really feeling a romantic connection. I always hope that by me putting that energy out there that it will be reciprocated.
First, though, the biggest news of the day.
Hack.
Tonight, the long, painful wait almost over. The last remaining captives held by Hamas will soon be reunited with their loved ones.
On Triple J.
Today, there's been a massive milestone in the path to peace in Gaza. As I speak, the final remaining living hostages held by Hamas after the October 7 attacks are being released. The scenes around Israel and Gaza have been extraordinary as people hope this marks an end to the war. Soon, you'll hear from a Palestinian aid worker about what life has been like in Gaza over the past few days. But first, here's Ilian Regian with the latest.
We've just heard that seven hostages have been released.
Since the early hours of this morning, hundreds of Israelis have been gathered in Hostage Square in Tel Aviv. They were waiting for the news that the last living hostages have been released by Hamas. The ABC's Middle East correspondent, Matt Doran, was there.
Those hostages, let's go through those names. They are Matan Angest, Guy Gilboa Dalal, Alon Oel, Eitan Zur, Gali and Ziv Berman, the brothers, Eitan Moore and Omri Miran.
So they celebrated two birthdays without their dad.
For Alana Zajcik, this day has been almost 2 years in the making. On October 7, her cousin's husband David and their twins were taken by Hamas. Alana's cousin and the twins were released during a ceasefire in 2023, but David wasn't.
It almost feels like it's become a story of when is dad coming home, when is Abba coming home.
This is all happening as world leaders head to the Middle East for more peace talks. Egypt is hosting the talks, which will be attended by 20 nations, including France, Jordan, Turkey and the UK. The president of the Palestinian Authority is also expected to attend. Despite the prospect of peace, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been quick to warn that there are challenges ahead.
The battle is not over. There are still very serious security challenges ahead. Some of our enemies are trying to recover so they can attack us again. And as we say here, we're on it.
The US President Donald Trump was a bit more optimistic.
War is over. The war is over. Okay, you understand that?
Trump left the US headed for the Middle East in the early hours of this morning. He's been widely congratulated for his role in brokering this peace deal. The US president is now hoping to secure a lasting ceasefire, but he's not sure yet what that'll mean for Gaza.
You have to get people taken care of first, but it's going to start really essentially immediately. I mean, they're going to have to start by removing a lot of the structures that you see that are down. It's blasted. This is like a demolition site.
Hamas releasing the last Israeli hostages is part of phase one of Donald Trump's peace deal. The deal will also see Israel release about 2,000 Palestinian prisoners and detainees. And once the hostages are released, more aid is expected to flow to Gaza, which humanitarian groups say is desperately needed. Footage out of Gaza today shows aid trucks being swarmed by people looking for supplies. Yazdan Alamawi is the head of Gaza City's Amira Aid Organisation. He's one of the thousands of Palestinians who returned home over the weekend. He says the situation on the ground is dire.
The infrastructure, electricity, we want everything to be rebuilt soon. Without having those basic services, including the health, water and medication, shelter to the people, things are going to exacerbate as long as we are approaching the winter time.
Hack on Triple J.
That is reporter Lillian Rangia speaking there. And tomorrow you'll hear from someone in Israel who's been campaigning for the hostages to be released. But right now you're going to hear from someone who lives in Gaza. Abir Abu Mutlak is a 26-year-old aid worker in Gaza and has spoken to us a few times on Hack about what she's been experiencing there. Abir, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
We heard late last week that Hamas and Israel have agreed to a ceasefire. What is the mood like in Gaza right now?
It is quite hectic. It's somehow quiet and hectic. People are walking outside again. They're looking up at the sky with their minds full of hope for the first time in months. But you can also feel a tension. The tension is real since no one really trusts this peace. We've had so many ceasefires that turned into fruitful before, even though that there are children playing in the streets that are filled with rubble. There are also adults who are watching them silently. And you can see that everyone is almost afraid to believe that this is actually the end of the war.
What about you personally? How are you feeling about it?
I also want to believe that this is the end. I have been trying to imagine everything that is going to happen in the upcoming weeks, if it actually worked. But you see that every ceasefire comes with promises. More aid, more access, a step towards peace, but then they go back into the same cycle of blockade and bombing. What we actually need is more than a pause in the violence. We need more than this. We need freedom of movement. We need access to medicine. We need clean water. And we actually need real accountability. If the world wants peace here, it has to look beyond the ceasefire and ask, how are they going to live?
Can you describe, for maybe someone who hasn't heard you speak on Hack before, Abir, what it is like for you? What is your day today?
Every day is about waking up, thinking about what are we supposed to eat today. I work at the moment with an international NGO called MAP, Medical Aid for Palestinians. So ever since I started working with them, I've been working in different hospitals, providing neonatal care for babies, newborn babies. So my life has been around all of that. Apart from it, I think all the time about my siblings. What are they going to do about their education? I have a sister who is 16 years old. She's still in 11th grade. She hasn't been able to actually go to school and to study just like everyone else at her age. I actually need her to move in her life after losing both of her parents and actually to study and to be a person that she wants to be. But recently, my life has been all about work, how my siblings, and sometimes, just sometimes, I imagine how my future can be if I hadn't had all of these responsibilities.
Yeah, you've already experienced so much devastation and loss, including the death of your mother and your friends, which we spoke about the last time you were on Hack. But recently, your dad passed away. What happened?
My mother died last year, and my father just passed away 3 weeks ago. Both of them passed away because of lack of medicine and medical aid. And my mother passed away with a heart stroke, and my father passed away with a brain stroke. And you can see that the casualties of this war are not only the people who were bombed or who got shot. They're also the people who couldn't access food, who couldn't access medicine. I miss them so much. Sometimes all I think about is what I would have done if they were here after this ceasefire took place. At least now they are in a place where they don't have to suffer from hunger, from being unable to provide to themselves and to us. At least they are safe.
Abir, I'm so sorry to hear that, and thank you so much for sharing that with us. You are listening to Hack on Triple J. And last time, Abia, we spoke to you, you told us your heart was broken, but you didn't have the luxury of grieving. How are you feeling now with the possibility that the war might be over?
Now I have the luxury of grieving, and it is terrifying because now I have to stand and accept it all and to actually absorb it. Now I'm supposed to start thinking about the future of myself and my siblings. I have to work, not just think, not just dream. No, I'm supposed to take action. Everything is not helping me to actually do that in the way that I want, since we still don't have enough aid. We still don't have electricity. We don't have gas. We don't have all of that yet. But once all of these normalities that we used to think are luxury during war are back to our lives, I think that I can return to being a humanized human, since this war just stripped us from our humanity. We started to believe that electricity is a luxury and that cooking on gas is like our top dream at the moment. So now that if everything returns and even gets better, I think that I will be able to grieve, but in not in that kind of depressing way, but in kind of I'm living and I want to live and I'm going to live.
You mentioned there that you're still not getting access to a lot of things that the aid has been promised. We are hearing, yes, that the UN has said real progress has been made in delivering aid into Gaza since the ceasefire took effect on Friday. As an aid worker, yeah, what are you seeing? What have you not received?
Well, a few trucks in doesn't mean that aid is in. I mean, you can see a truck on TV and think, oh, help is reaching them. But that truck doesn't feed thousands of families. People are starving. They are still starving, especially in the north. The food prices are still up 10, if not 20 times. I don't know if, yes, aid is going to be better in the upcoming days or weeks, but so far it trickles in.
Abia, you've mentioned it a little bit already around what you hope will happen in the next couple of days. Past that, for you and your siblings, what do you hope that your future might look like?
To be honest, we have had so many fights over the past week because they just want to move abroad and start fresh. People think that once this is all over, the ceasefire is here, that you have to actually leave everything and start fresh from somewhere new where you don't have to see rubble all everywhere and you actually have access to everything that you need. But I see it differently. I have hope that we can actually rebuild everything that we have lost. This is our land. And I have survived this war. You see, I've stayed in the north for the past 2 years. So many people moved to the south. They've escaped death. But I decided to stay here. I wanted to stay here. I didn't want to go out even from my neighborhood. Even after losing my home, I stayed in the same neighborhood because this is where I've lived all of my life. And even now, when the ceasefire is not 100%, I still want to stay. I don't want to escape. Moving abroad, a standard fresh is escaping, in my point of view. I believe so many people had no choice but that. But now that I have the choice, I want to stay here. I want to rebuild our homes. And I want to see Gaza return to its glory. I want to be here present, viewing the change. I viewed the change, the drastic change that it went through and how it became all rubbles. So I want to see life getting back to it.
Abi, you have absolutely incredible strength and I really, really appreciate you being able to take the time and to share what's happening in Gaza for so many people who have no idea. Appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That is Abia Abu Matlak. She's a 26-year-old aid worker in Gaza. And as I'm sure you're seeing, it is a developing story that we will be following here on Hack, continuing this conversation tomorrow. But it's time to move on.
Hack.
South Australia's algal bloom crisis has been described as one of the worst in the world.
So what we've been seeking to do as a government is comprise a comprehensive summer plan.
So the message this season is quite simple. If you see the red and yellow flags flying, it is safe to swim.
Some days a beach is affected and the next day it may not be.
The opposition leader says he wants more than just beach patrols in the algal bloom summer plan.
We're also expecting to hear more details of the state government's summer plan by the end of the month.
On Triple J.
Thousands of sea creatures and marine life are being killed on the coastline of South Australia by something that's being called one of the most unprecedented environmental disasters, a record level of toxic algae bloom. If you don't know what this means, basically it happens when colonies of algae, simple plants that live in the sea and freshwater, grow out of control and produce toxic or harmful effects. It can look like that brown-coloured foam that you might have seen wash up on a beach. And what's happening in South Australia is being called unprecedented because it was this perfect storm of runoff from flooding, a marine heatwave, and then cold upwellings that created an environment that the algae can thrive off. And this has had a huge toll on businesses, the fishing industry, tourism, and the mental health of locals as well. If you live in South Australia and you've been affected by this, I'd love to hear from you. You can text me on 0439 757 555. Are you worried about it getting worse? Well, today, the state government has announced a summer plan to tackle the disaster. And here to tell us about it is Lucy Hood, South Australian Environment Minister. Minister, thanks so much for coming on Hack.
Thank you so much for having me.
Minister, the South Australian government announced a pretty expansive plan this morning to tackle the algal bloom. But I think what most people want to know is, will they be okay to swim at the beaches this summer?
They absolutely will. Our beaches will remain open and we're really encouraging people to get down and enjoy our beaches. So the harmful algal bloom has really only affected about 30% of our coastline. And in fact, some of the areas where it was first detected, it's no longer there. And it's also a really dynamic bloom, in which case it can be in one place in the morning, but perhaps have dissipated by the afternoon. And so that is why we did announce a really important partnership with Surf Life Saving South Australia. And there were two elements to that. We're going to be boosting patrols this summer at 8 of our most popular beaches. And also we announced an upgrade to the Surf Life Saving app called Beach Safe, which will provide beachgoers with three important pieces of information, and it'll tell you if any abnormal foam is present at the beach you are planning to visit, whether the water's discoloured, and also the time in which the beach was cleaned that morning. And then we encourage people when they do go to the beach, we'll have at our 8 very popular beaches, our surf lifesavers doing their patrols from the 1st of December. That'll be 7 days a week. So encouraging people to, you know, swim between the flags at those beaches. The health advice has suggested that if there is foamy water, discoloured water, then perhaps avoid those areas.
We know this has been affecting the South Australian coast since March of this year. Why has an official response taken this long?
So it's actually been quite an extensive response when you look at the $28 million between the state government and the federal government. And now we will be releasing our full summer plan during this week. And we've already announced some of those key commitments, the extra beach patrols, our Beach Safe app, the dining cashback, and the extension of our travel vouchers. We do understand, though, that this is an unprecedented algal bloom. We obviously have our amazing scientists at SARDI always monitoring our oceans. But when we didn't see that it was dissipating, you know, we really saw that effort and response and support ramp up.
What will Surf Life Saving actually be able to do in the event of signs of algae at the beach? Will they shut the beaches down?
No, they won't. So all the advice is very clear that we're not shutting the beaches down. But when you actually look at surf life saving across our country, so in South Australia for 100 years, they've actually been dealing with life-threatening events in our oceans, whether that's marine life like sharks, whether that is rips. And so they've been dealing with life-threatening events in our oceans. So this isn't one of them. This is just another factor in which they'll have to consider when, as they have have done for 100 years when they've gone to the beach, they've pulled out their flags and they decide on where they believe the safest place on the beach is to swim. And so this is just another factor that they'll be considering when they're making that assessment every day as to where they believe the safest place is on the beach to swim.
It has been life-threatening for thousands of marine life and sea creatures we know that have died and washed upon the shores, things like stingrays and turtles and fish. What's the plan around the actual ocean and stopping that from happening?
That's right. And I just do want to put on the record that that is, you know, can be really traumatic for people. The beach for many is their safe space. It's their chance to rest, relax, get away from the hustle and bustle of life. And, you know, they care deeply about our ocean and our marine life. And so one thing local communities have been working on is around community oyster reefs. Off the shore of South Australia, basically our entire oceans were covered in natural oyster reefs. And many were harvested after colonisation. And so community oyster reefs have been a great way of people contributing and giving back. It's initiatives like that that are definitely worth looking at because particularly with the community oyster reefs, it allows people to kind of give back and contribute.
Minister, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for coming on Hack.
Thank you so much for having me.
That is Lucy Hood, the South Australia Environment Minister.
Hack.
I feel like everybody's just getting ghosted on dating apps. Some girl who's talking to me ghosts me so they can go talk to some other guy, but then she gets ghosted by that other guy and comes back to me, but then I ghost her because I'm talking to someone else, and it's just a fucking cycle.
On Triple J.
Have you been using dating apps for a while? If you have, you've probably been ghosted a few times, but recently a headline said ghosting could be on the way out. Let me know if you've noticed people being more upfront about their feelings, or maybe you think ghosting has gotten worse. You can text me on 0439 757 555. We'll chat to a psychologist soon and get some advice. But first, Shalana Medora has this story.
Ghosting is out. That was the sensational headline in the Wall Street Journal earlier this year. According to the article, more and more young Americans are opting to immediately text a person and let them know they're not their cup of tea. The article says younger people in particular are more confident in expressing their feelings and boundaries. Fran Folkes-Taylor from WA is one of them.
A really, you know, nice message is such a fine way to let someone know how you're feeling.
Fran is a sexologist and sex educator, and she's all about the communication.
I wouldn't call it a template, but having something that I've used in the past can be helpful. Like, I really enjoyed our time together, but I'm just not feeling a strong connection.
Fran personalises the message and tries to keep it positive.
The part about not wanting to catch up any further would just be a small part of the message.
She says everyone she sent the breakup message to has reacted really well.
People are just stoked to know what's going on.
She definitely prefers it if people are upfront with her too.
Your ego's bruised for a small amount of time, but it feels a lot less crap than if you don't hear from someone at all.
It's just an absolute head case to be like, why does this keep happening? Like, it is so easy to have a conversation.
This is someone we're calling Cassie. She's asked us not to use her real name because, in her own words, she's been single her whole life.
So I've been on a lot of dates.
Not all of those dates have ghosted.
Any time that a guy has been like, hey, thanks, lovely to get to know you, but this is something else that's going on for me at the moment or whatever, I've always been so grateful because it puts a full stop on it and you have closure.
Cassie was seeing a guy recently who ghosted her. She'd left some flex cards, those conversation starters, at his house. The day before we chatted, she decided to message him and ask for them back.
I said, hey, can I get my flex cards from you? And he replied straight away and said, yep, of course, I'll drop them off to you this week. And I said, that would be great, thank you. Also, why did you ghost me? And he hasn't replied.
Fran reckons young people are getting better at expressing themselves and their needs and boundaries. But she thinks ghosting is still the default for a lot of people.
I believe anxiety and that avoidance probably plays a big part in not communicating, saying nothing, because it might be the easier thing to do in the moment.
She says the irony is ghosting can actually be terrible for your mental health.
you know, you sound like a good person if you're always sort of communicating, but mostly it's about me, to be honest, and how it'll just eat away at me if I'm not sort of letting someone know where I'm at.
Cassie says people shouldn't be so worried about hurting other people's feelings by letting them down gently.
That person's going to survive, but at least that person can go away with some closure. It just makes the whole situation so much easier for everyone, and then you can walk away with like a, I did the right thing, you know?
She says ghosting hurts way more than just being upfront.
It's not that hard. Easier than we realise, everyone. That's my closing, that's my final statement.
This is Hack on Triple J.
Sharla Mandora reporting there. And hearing from you as well on 0439757555. Someone here saying, ghosting is kind of out. I've definitely seen more clear communication, but there's still plenty of I don't feel romantically about you and I'd just like to be friends. Someone else saying, when people aren't ghosting, they're getting ChatGPT to write their messages. Yes, you can tell it's ChatGPT, but it's better than nothing, I guess. Yeah, being ghosted can be one of the worst feelings in the world. So why do people do it? Well, here to chat a bit more about it is Dr. Chris Cheers, psychologist, educator, and author. Dr. Chris, thanks so much for coming on Hack.
Thanks, Dee.
Firstly, is the Wall Street Journal right? Do you think ghosting is out?
Look, if you look at the trends like worldwide, and we mostly look at Western nations here, the trend has certainly been going up for sort of the last couple of decades with technology. But sometimes research takes a little while to catch up with community. So maybe we're hearing that there's a change in community, but the moment I'd say ghosting's definitely still in.
Maybe people are just using AI now. Yeah, what do you think about this idea that young people are being more straight up about their feelings and letting people know straight away that they're not interested?
I think they're getting better at it slowly, like they're learning what to say. But there is a difference between kind of getting ChatGPT to write you out something and saying what you think you should say versus kind of being authentic and honest in a message. And I think maybe that's the bit that people are still not really getting.
I know that dating apps has kind of created a bit of a culture where people are just ghosting really easily, right? They're not replying maybe, or they'll go on a date and then just, you know, unmatch you. But sometimes people will ghost someone that they've been dating for months, or I've even heard about for years. Why do people do it?
I think you hit on something really important there. I think thinking about the relationship and how important that person is to you, how long you've been together, really needs to change the kind of message you might write. So whilst you could write a pretty simple, basic message early on, like, that was great, but no thanks, if you're dating with someone for months, you know, they might be really invested in this. And that might mean when you need to be really authentic and open with what your experience of this is, where you're at, because that person is going to want some closure rather than just like a short one sentence.
But what is it? Is it commitment issues? Like, what's going on? How can someone do that to someone else?
It's avoidance, right?
Yeah.
Like, we just are avoiding our own emotions. We don't really want to face, you know, how we're feeling. And when you talk to people about why they ghost or why they stop communicating, they sometimes think they're doing it for the other person. They don't want to hurt them. We have this thing where we think if we're honest with people and tell them what's actually happening, that will hurt more. But in actual fact, being clear and kind, even though it's harder in the first instance, in the long term, it allows that person to understand, which gives them closure so they can move on.
You're a psychologist. You've seen people on the other side of this, of being hurt by ghosting. How can it impact people?
Well, the research shows it increases all sorts of psychological distress, right? Like heart rate to depression to anxiety to even long-term like mental health disorders. When it keeps happening over and over again, increases the likelihood for that. So it has a real impact because people need an explanation. People need closure. And I certainly work with a lot of people in session who are trying to get that closure without that person on the other side giving them anything. And it's really hard. We can grieve that loss. You can find your own closure, but it takes time. And it often on the other end, that person is just left wondering, you know, why.
Yeah. How can you do it, Chris, without just texting and calling them a million times asking what happened?
And well, you can ask. This is, I think we also, on the other end, if you're ghosted, know that you can also respond and say, hey, what's happening? Like sometimes we don't do that bit. We don't actually ask for what we need from people. It just because, you know, someone's ghosted you doesn't mean you're not allowed to just say, hey, you know, we dated for like 6 months there. Can I just have a little bit more explanation? And sometimes people may be able to offer that, but at least you ask for it.
On 0439757555, someone here says ghosting is so cowardly, especially when they are the ones who showed interest first. And when you're trying to get to know them, it makes you wonder what you did wrong. And just lastly, Chris, best way to end it to someone, text-wise maybe, a script, without ghosting them?
clear is kind is a good way to keep in mind. So, and also speaking from your experience. So say something nice, like we had a nice connection here, but then use an I statement, but I'm, you know, not feeling it, or I'm not looking for that relationship like this right now, but I think you really deserve someone who is looking for the same thing you are. So it's kind of speak from your experience, be clear and be direct as possible.
Oh, so succinct and so quick. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate you coming on Hack.
No worries.
That is Dr. Chris Cheers, a psychologist, educator and author speaking there. And I love this text from James. I knew the Hack Up would rear its head again. That's right. Dee Salmon's my name and I normally present the Hook Up on Triple J. But yeah, filling in for Dave Marchese. I'll be back tomorrow as well. Hack.